Previously on No Reserves Radio.
Oh my God, Angelo, come on. have some self-respect. The Eagles can't hurt you if you don't constantly pander to them.
Here's the biggest indictment of Dame that I can say. Dame has been so like off this year that Ren went on live air and said Jalen Brunson deserved an all-star start over him.
You are now Angelo DiDeLulo.
Do you think it is possible that the management of the Memphis Grizzlies are just buying into the reckless youth movement and they got rid of the one person in the locker room that probably was telling Ja to knock it off?
Because he's taken advantage of me multiple times when I was younger. That sounded bad. Holy shit.
Yeah, I think that's true. I think you're correct in that assessment.
Oh, that was fast. What's going on, guys? Welcome to another episode of No Reserves Radio. I'm your host, Angelo. With me, as always, is Alex. And now that we don't have to do predictions, we're free to talk about what we want to talk about. What's up, Alex? By the way, your Thursday night streak continues. There is no evidence that you have ever predicted a Thursday night game right. I don't care if anyone wants to go back and, you know, listen to all your Thursday night predictions from last year. There's no evidence.
So... Hey, what's up, guys? What's up, Angela? You dropped that bomb on me right away, so thank you very much for that one. But yeah, that's another
curse
loss.
Is so powerful, it like basically brought Puka Nacua back from the dead.
See, that's a good thing. Like, that was a wild sequence. Like, first, Cooper Kupp was definitely going to be back. Like, he's 100%. He's for sure, like, great right now. Puka, there's optimism that he will be back. And then it's like all of a sudden both are active. Then reports came out that Puka Nacua is going to be fairly limited, which, to be fair, he was. He only played 57, if I'm not mistaken, 57% of the snaps. So he was somewhat limited. But still, like, he nearly doubled the amount of targets that Cooper Kupp got. He looked great out there. Like, for a guy that hasn't played since week one, yes, he looked great. Like, he was fluid with his movement. Now, how much of that was the defense taking away Cooper Kupp? How much was that was him actually being that great? Well, doesn't really matter here because, like, teams are always going to hyper-focus on Cooper Kupp because he is, for all intents and purposes, the one on that team. But yeah, Puka continues to be great, apparently. We weren't on Puka last year. I drafted some Puka this year in redraft. I've still not touched him in the Dynasty. But for redraft, I'm hyped. I'm all for it. But yeah, fun fact in regards to the Thursday Night Football. I dropped you this stat earlier today. But I am now 0-8 on Thursday Night Football. Assuming the average odd for the picks is like -110, which is like basically 1.9 if you're European. So if you're European, I'm also here for you. It's 1.9 odds in our system. But for the American folks, it's -110. So if you assume -110 and you grabbed $100 and you put that, you faded me every single week. So in week one, you faded me, you put those $100 on the pick, you would have made bag like 190 basically. After that, if you grab that money and faded me every single week, you just roll over that money over and over and over again, you would now have 17K in your bank account after 8 weeks.
I'm sure. Unfortunately, I don't think Alex made anyone rich, but
hey,
that's good enough.
If you're out there, you faded me every single week on Thursday Night Football. I've made you bank. So, you know, now that we've brought such a big, like, focus on this, it's most definitely going to end, like, next week or something like that. Or maybe I'm just wishful thinking. I can't possibly go 0-18 now?
I'm about to say, do you think that you could miss every single, because it's not like you're trying to miss. You're trying to predict these right. You're just wrong every week.
Yeah, I mean, it's like sometimes it's just like, for example, last week it was the Denver Broncos and the Saints game. Like that one definitely went to the toilet fairly quick. But that, yeah. This one, this was the side that, if I'm not mistaken, so far on Thursday Night Football, the public has been mostly right on the pick so far. And the Vikings was a very much public-backed side. But the line always moved in the direction of the Rams. So that told you that basically like the Sharps, quote-unquote, were very much in on the Los Angeles Rams side. And there was a lot of money coming in on the Rams. But you know, even though I had
So this again makes me like question betting, because if you're rich enough, a handful of people can influence a line over like thousands of people.
So and so, because like the Sharps aren't necessarily like your average billionaire. In the Gold Stars, for example, like they are people who do this for a living, basically. Now, yeah. They do have a lot of money, and sometimes it's not even about the money that they put. But I don't know if you know this, but having been betting the NFL for, I don't know, since I started watching, basically. Like, fun fact, during my college days, especially like first year and second year, I spent more time betting than I spent actually taking any classes or paying attention to the classes I was taking in college. I had basically like this notebook that lasted me, I don't know, it lasted me around 3 months or so. So every 3 months I needed to get a new one. And I had this notebook where I was basically putting every single bet that I took. I was tracking it like religiously. It even became sort of a thing amongst my group of friends in college where they were actively asking for my bets. And like, studying that, learning that, following a few of the Sharps, it's not necessarily the money that they put in, but it's the bets that they put in. Like, for example, when they put a bet, it moves the line more. So say you and me put a bet, same amount, like $100. We put that bet in, and he comes in and he puts a bet. I don't know, this is a stupid like example, but just for the sake of it. He came in and he put just like $50 the opposite side of us. The line is going to move more towards him because they know he's a Sharp. So it's like, it's also the, let's put quote unquote, street rep that those guys have in the betting house, in the betting market versus what the average Joe has. So it's not necessarily about the money, but about who places those bets. Now, of course, the money is always going to move the line, especially when they are aligned with the public, like money and whatnot. It just moves everything, but it's not all of it. That's at least my understanding from the times that I was super into it. Now I bet a bit more casually and whatnot. I still bet every single weekend, but it's still a bit more casually. So it's funny, the two Americans that are on the show never bet this. It's like, yeah. I'm the one guy who's heavily, like, betting this shit. Like, I bet. What? My bad.
Honestly, so with the new promotion I got, you know, I have a little bit more disposable income. I'm not going to do it this year because this year is, like, half the old job, half the new job. But next year, I think we should do a pool.
Of what? Like, we both put some cash in and we just bet our sides?
Yep, 100%.
I mean, I'm down for it. I usually don't bet sides all that much. This is like my, how do you call it? My escape from that is that I basically like bet the sides here for our show.
Oh, you parlay. Parlay.
No, I just go with the player props mostly.
Yeah, the parlays, yeah.
Yeah, but you can play those as singles as well. Like, the odds aren't
great.
You don't get, like, plus 500s, plus 600s, unless you ladder. For example, yesterday, I think I hit a plus 300 and a plus 500 or 600 on the Puka Nacua alt lines, for example. I think I had them 60 plus and 80 plus or something like that, or 70 plus and 80 plus. So those are usually the types of bets I go with. His line was like in the 30s, so something crazy like that. So that's, anyway, maybe McVay is just fucking with us and the guy's actually good. And apparently he was, so props to me. But yeah, I'm down for that next year, if you want to do it.
We'll create a profile and yeah, we'll get you.
Yeah, but yeah, definitely like this was a side in which I was with the public. The public has been getting Thursday Night Football correct, and I fucked the public because there went the Minnesota Vikings.
You did.
That was actually a very good game for a Thursday Night Football game. That one was
a very good sharp. Game.
Especially, no, I wasn't saying especially. Apart from the end, though, what do you make of the referees this year? Do you think they are worse than they were in years prior? Or are they just...
I think they're the same, honestly.
They're the same? Because, like, this is another instance in which this is a primetime game, and it's about the refs. It's, again, the Vikings, they were down by 8. They were starting a drive. They had a minute and 46 left, no timeouts, and they were starting a drive inside of their own 5-yard line. I believe it was by either the 2 or the 3. There are no steps back to throw. He got sacked by, I want to say it was Verse, but I'm not entirely certain about that, the rookie Jared Verse. But when he gets sacked, there's a clear face mask penalty where, like, the guy's just, he's sacking him by the face mask, which is just nuts. No flag gets in. They end up getting a safety there. So it's another high profile mistake by the refs there, which leaves a sour taste in everyone's mouth.
I think there's two, like, obviously you need to call that, but I do think there's, like, I feels like sometimes the refs can't win, because if the refs don't call something, then you're going to be like, oh my god, the refs are rigging it. The refs are so for the Kansas City Chiefs or the LA Rams. But a lot of people just want the refs to hold their whistle. But when you hold your whistle, you do risk things like this happening. And I don't know. I'm more in the camp where I would rather just let the players dictate the games. And if you miss a call, you miss a call. Because these things are happening like fast, like quick. Like, you got to make these decisions extremely fast. I wouldn't want to be a ref, quite honestly. So,
I don't see, like, the amount of scrutiny that they get. Even, yeah. Like, although some, I'm saying this, but there were some calls in a few other games where it's like, they were 50-50 calls, especially when it involves the Chiefs. I know everyone likes to pile in on them, and they're helped by the refs and whatnot. You mentioned that as well. And it's like, some of the calls, like, for example, I remember the Atlanta game, for example, where, like, the Falcons had a PI called that wasn't really a PI, for example, in the last drive. And everyone is complaining that, I can't remember right now, if it was like a PI that wasn't called on the Falcons or a PI that was called on the Chiefs that shouldn't be called, something along those lines. It's like people forget some of the calls that go against them because it's just the nature of the refs at times. Like, they aren't everywhere. I think that some plays should be reviewed. For example, maybe I'm missing something here. But what I was always told is that every single scoring play is reviewed. Like, a safety is a scoring play, so shouldn't that be reviewable?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, so why wasn't the play reviewed since it was a safety? Like, those are some of the nuances that are sort of weird and should probably... I wouldn't be surprised because I've seen, like, this 5 times already. When I watched the play, I thought, why isn't this reviewable? And then I've seen like 5 or 6 headlines with this same issue. So I wouldn't be shocked if it's one of those things that happened this year. Like, the league, this is such a scenario that rarely matters for the safeties this late in the game, that the league just maybe proposes some sort of rule change here to make this reviewable. But it's still like, I don't know. It feels like they are maybe slightly worse this year, but I could definitely see this just being over-exaggerated purely because of the high-profile spots in which they happen. But they're always controversial, so.
I agree.
It's
okay. Kind of like I said, it's hard to make those decisions in that, like, just right there in the moment. And then you're expected to get it right all the time.
Yeah, that is true.
Anyway,
so
go on,
I was going to say, so your Joe Burrow finally gets another win versus the Cleveland Browns. This is now his second win on his career, which, good job, man. Must feel good to get a second win versus the Browns. He's now 2-5 versus the Browns in his career. He has beat them in 2022, the second game, if I'm not mistaken.
I have a feeling he's about to be racking up a lot of wins against the Cleveland Browns here in the future.
And you beat them again this year. So what do you think of that game?
It was ugly. It wasn't fun to watch, quite honestly, for the most part. It really wasn't.
So like, you beat them 21-14. I believe you got a return touchdown right at the start.
Stop playing at halftime, pretty much. And we dared. That's the thing. And here's the thing. I don't disagree with the game plan. We got to 21 points, and then Zach Taylor's basically like, okay, Cleveland Browns, Deshaun Watson, score 21 points. They can't do it because they know the offense is pathetic.
Yeah, they were just like, this is going to be more than enough.
So, I'm just saying it was a terrible viewing experience. I'm not saying it wasn't smart. I'm not saying it wasn't right. I'm just saying it was a terrible viewing experience to watch the second half of that putrid game, especially when Dorian Thompson Robinson basically had the whole third quarter to himself.
Hey, but in the last quarter, crab legs Jameis Winston came in.
Yeah, and it's a debate. It's a debate. Like I don't get it. I don't get Cleveland. I live an hour away, and I don't get how this organization is run. I think anyone with a pair of eyes could see that Jameis A gives you the best chance, and B is the best quarterback that's remaining in that building. Maybe that even includes with Deshaun. So I just don't get it. I don't get Stefanski. I don't get the GM. I don't get the Browns.
I mean, he was at least named the starter. Now, I believe DTR was injured and didn't practice a whole lot, but I believe he's going to be active and Jameis is still the starter. Stefanski said Dorian Thompson Robinson will be the backup to Jameis Winston today. So this week, he said today that he's going to be this week's backup to Jameis Winston. And they face immediately a Baltimore Ravens. Now that we've seen Monday Night Football, in which the Ravens played on Week 7, that was another game that the Ravens pretty much handled comfortably. Although that the Ravens still have one major issue right now, which is they lead the league in explosive plays allowed. So they are basically a free hit every single week to allow, like, I don't know, a 50-yard play, which messes up those big numbers. So this is like going back to our bets. I believe I was on Baltimore. I don't feel as good about being on Baltimore anymore because Winston, because their defense just allows those huge chunk plays. There's those freebies that can immediately flip a full position, for example.
Yeah,
but absolutely. I still Cleveland. Think they're going to get shellacked by the Baltimore Ravens, though.
I don't think they're going to get shellacked. Like, I don't care what Myles Garrett says. You cannot tell me that defense as a whole has more faith in what they saw in Deshaun Watson than what they've seen out of Jameis Winston, or what they know they've seen historically out of Jameis Winston. Can't convince me.
I could see it, but at the same time, like, unless... And now, Jameis, to be fair, he's getting, like, every single offensive lineman back, which just leaves you wondering, were those linemen being held until Deshaun Watson was hurt. And it's like, you're good to play. So the O-line is still not good.
But not only that, again, you have you also have Nick Chubb another week back removed from the catastrophic knee injury. So that's also going to be working in your favor.
That is true. And he did look okay. He didn't look like his former self or anything. He looked okay. He also didn't have a full workload or anything. So, and yeah, as the season progresses, they should definitely be a bit better. Now, what are they fighting for is the thing. Because, like, do you get a wild card spot with 9 wins?
In this AFC, maybe. Yeah, I mean, think about it. Miami just had to go basically, not basically, they had to go half the season without Tua.
They still have one more win than the Browns.
But only one more. That's what I'm saying. The East, the AFC East is terrible. The AFC South feels like they're trying to lose games. I think it is. I think it's
9 wins. They would need to, so they have 7 games. There's 10 games left. So they would need to go 8-2 to have a chance at the playoffs even. With the toughest schedule of anything. Ah, Jesus Christ. Of any team left.
Yeah.
So I don't know, man. I feel like But this is such a losing fight that you're having. You're like one loss and you're basically done. So I don't know. This feels like a stretch that they shouldn't really go through.
I think they could make a run.
But they still, who have they faced in the division? They faced you guys. Is that it? So they faced, I can pull up their schedule. They have faced the Dallas Cowboys, the Jags, the Giants, the Raiders, the Commanders, the Eagles, the Bengals. So they have only faced one divisional matchup. So they still need to face the Baltimore Ravens, the Pittsburgh Steelers, you guys again, and then all of that round again of the Ravens and then the Steelers. They still have the Chiefs on deck. This just feels like, this truly feels like the hardest schedule of any team right now. I think.
It's not easy. I'm not saying it's easy. I'm just saying. I think it's still possible, honestly.
I would just tank this shit, to be honest. So, speaking of the Baltimore Ravens Monday Night Football game, the Buccaneers played in that game. And the Buccaneers are in trouble right now because they lost Mike Evans early in that game. So he got injured in his hamstring, left the game, came back. Then, like, a few plays afterwards in the end zone, he gets a target. Then he injures his hamstring again. So he's now going to be out until the bye, or after the bye, that is, which I believe their bye is on week 11. So he's going to be out quite a while. And then they lost Chris Godwin in like the second to last play of the game, while down like double digits, if I'm not mistaken. What do you think was the right call there? Do you think they should have gone for it? Do you think like they shouldn't have gone as hard, like go for it, but take some of the starters out? Because effectively, Chris Godwin it's done for the season because he was trying to get a first down on a meaningless play.
I mean, you can criticize, this is hard. So you can definitely criticize the Buccaneers. You can criticize Chris Godwin, but I just think it's extremely difficult to just shut down like that competitive drive that tells you to just keep going, if that makes sense. So I think it's more on the Buccaneers. Like, this is on Todd Bowles to sit his players and protect their health. Because I'm not going to say Chris Godwin was out there. I'm not going to say Chris Godwin, you're out there, you need to give a half-ass effort. Then he gets lambasted for giving a half-ass effort. Like, so more on the Buccaneers than on Chris Godwin, in my opinion.
Yeah. I feel like Chris was, and it's hard for the players. Like, if you take him out and it's like they're down 10, they're trying to get a touchdown. They got a successful onside field goal, a successful onside kick before that. So they got a touchdown. They were down 10. They got the onside. They were marching down the field. So you can make the argument that, like, he would probably be pissed if he was left standing in the sidelines for that. But it's like, at the same time, the hit rate on onside field, on onside kicks, is so low. Like, you already got one. Do we really think, like, it is realistic for you to get another touchdown, get another onside field goal? Jesus Christ, why am I stating onside field goal? Onside kick! And then go ahead and go for a field goal. That just seems so unrealistic. Like, I know these guys are competitors. I know all of that. But at the same time, like, you need to get in touch with reality in those cases. Like, that was meaningless. Like, there's still a whole lot of season to play. They still have a great, and they still do have a very good record in terms of in division, especially. Like, they're still neck and neck with the Atlanta Falcons. This just feels like a rough way to basically, is their season done? Because now they are playing with Sterling Shepard, that wide receiver, something Palmer. Is it Trey Palmer? I believe it's Trey Palmer, the rookie wide receiver from last season. And the guy that they drafted this year, which I always confuse with the guys that you guys drafted. But this one is Jalen McMillan, right? Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Yeah.
You confuse him with Burton, really? I mean, I guess I could the hairstyle are similar. I don't know.
Now, anyway, I confuse them because purely, like, the name seems similar. So I just, like, though they also went in similar rounds. Yeah, McMillan and your guy, like, what one is Jalen McMillan and your guy is what? What's his name?
Jalen Burton.
Jalen Burton. So yeah, those are both Jalen.
Jermaine Burton.
So similar enough first names, and I believe they went in similar rounds. Like, one in the third, or did both win in the third round?
I'm pretty sure we picked Jermaine in the second.
Oh, was it?
Jermaine Burton.
I can just check the wide receivers drafted. 2024. So it was Jalen McMillan in the third, Jermaine Burton in the third. Yeah, so that's why I confused him. They went like 12 picks across from one another. Both start with similar enough names, so it's like, just confuse them from time to time. But yeah, now they're going to have Jalen McMillan and Sterling Shepard and Trey Palmer starting. That just seems like an issue.
I mean, if I'm not mistaken, Mike Evans is going to be back here shortly, right? I know he's not playing
this
week.
It's after week 11. So that's best case scenario. So, I believe their bye is on week 11. So he comes
what
after
you're telling
the bye.
Me is there's going to be a lot of targets for Cade Otton, Rashad White, and thank God they're using three running backs now. They're using Rashad White, they're using Sean Tucker, and they're using Buck Irving. Yeah. So we might actually see a package that involves, like, Rashad White in the slot and Buck Irving and Sean Tucker in a split backfield, and that might be a legit formation they run.
And that might be a legit formation that they run often. That's the issue.
Oh my god.
Yeah, and then you look at the defense, like, the offense already has those many casualties. Then you look at the defense, like the defense isn't all, it's playing all that great. Like they are, like if I'm not mistaken, they are up there in terms of like pressure or blitz rate, that is blitz rate, and they get zero pressure. It's like it's insane.
I mean, yeah.
Plus, because of that and the crazy amount of blitzes that they throw out, they are the worst team, or up there as the one of the worst teams in the NFL versus the running back in terms of receiving. So, hey, fantasy tip for you guys. If you're starting, if you have a running back going against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, you go for that because the receiving upside for those guys. So, for example, this week, Bijan Robinson is probably going to have a very good game in the receiving side of it. Or Tyler Allgeier. I'm guessing Tyler Allgeier will run a bit more than usual, but Bijan is probably going to get a crazy amount of receptions.
Yeah, I can see that. I can see that.
But yeah, that's then we can talk about the Cardinals game, which it was just like, I don't know, that game just felt like the second game. It felt like everyone was watching Baltimore, and then when that was over, it was like, okay, we'll watch the last 10 minutes of the Chargers. Hey, but Baltimore covering means that last week, for the first week ever, we tied.
Isn't that sad that you can't even win a week? You have to fucking
We'll take our wins when we can take our wins, okay, Angelo?
A tie isn't a win.
Hey, it is. It is a moral win. We're giving participation trophies over here, okay? Okay. So this is like baseball Pee Wee League or some shit like that.
You're insane.
Oh yeah, seven, and we both went with 7 wins. I believe the. How many games were there? I believe there were some buys. So yeah, we went both 7-8. So under 500, not the best of weeks that we've had. But hey, I managed to tie you at least. So it's not another game that I've dropped back.
You're almost at, you've lost a game consistently every week that you're almost at the point where you need like a full week to catch up to me.
Basically, yeah. I'm down without counting this week because only one game happened. I am down 6 games, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah, 6 games.
That's a lot.
That is a lot, but it's still doable. I believe last year I was in worse shape versus you.
Well, yeah, I got more games right last year.
Yeah, so. But I believe my record is also a bit better. I would have to check. Would need to find those files.
Oh my god, I don't even want to talk about my record this year. Holy crap.
Your record, I mean, it was 7-8.
No, I'm talking about, like, overall.
No, disregard that. I fell into that mistake as well. They are counting every game that is going to happen this week as a loss because it hasn't happened yet.
Oh!
See? When I was making the calculations of our win-loss record, our percentages, they were just completely off. Like, I had a 30% win rate. When last time we talked about this, I had a 43% win rate. And it's like yours dropped to the 40s as well when you were very close to the 50s. So you need to take like 15 games off the losses, basically. So that's the issue there. If you take those 15 games, you are 55-54.
That's terrible, honestly.
Yeah, that's over 50%.
By a game.
Hey, you want to be over 50%. So you are over 50%.
Okay.
Let's not complain here.
We have higher aspirations here than being losers like Alex.
Okay. I'll take my shots and I'll leave right now. Mm-hmm. So, Since we didn't get to properly talk about the games, let's try and do that here a bit. So you talked about your team. I'll talk a bit about my team. That was a great game. I really liked that game. That was the first game where everything basically clicked.
Yeah.
The defense.
Kenneth Walker was sick during it, too.
Kenneth Walker was sick leading to the game. I believe he's still sick. Those were the injured reports that I saw earlier in the week. So some people were making the jokes that, like, his illness happened on, like, the illness came out on Saturday. So Saturday to Sunday. That's when he came out. And that's when his birthday happened, because he had his birthday on Sunday. So they were like, so this guy is going to dodge the game. but no, he played. And I played good as well. He great catches. I mean, he's just a great back. Like, I think he's one of the most, if not the most, undervalued running backs in the league. Like, when you talk about the best running backs and whatnot, you rarely see his name pop up. It's just, this dude is a freak, man. Just, Jesus Christ. His athleticism, his burst. He's now a very good pass catcher as well. Remember when people told me that he couldn't catch? I remember that. When, I don't know who told me that, but people did say that, huh? Don't you think? Don't you remember some of those things that you were saying about my guy, Kenneth Walker?
Oddly enough, I also remember saying Breece Hall was their better running back, and, you know, I still, oddly enough, think Breece Hall is the better running back.
Don't look now, but you could make an argument.
Oh, my God.
I don't know. I'm just saying. Let me check something here. According to PFF. Oh, PFF, Alex. Why are you using PFF? Fuck PFF. I know, nobody likes PFF because everyone wants to be... They want to be edgy, yeah, and just be like, yeah, PFF this, PFF that. Okay, just fuck off. These guys rate all of those players by the same metrics and the same shit. Like, whatever, this is just a standard. You can find another one that says the opposite. But I'm using this one because this is our show. So, it is what it is. PFF grades. Kenneth Walker, overall grade 88.7, the third best running back in the league. Breece Hall, 59.5, the 46th best running back in the league. This is out of 53.
That's fake news. That is such fake fucking news.
Receiving grade, Kenneth Walker has a 74%. Receiving grade, which is the ninth best out of any running back in the league. Breece Hall, a measly 57.2%, which is 41st best. And finally, just to complete this, Kenneth Walker has a 91.7 rush grade, which is the single best grade of any running back in the league at this moment. Breece Hall, 43rd. Out of 53, 61.3. He is 5th in the league in targets, Kenneth Walker is. 4th in receptions, and he missed 2 games. This is for running backs, of course. He's also 5th in receiving touchdowns, 12th in receiving yards. Dude is just the beast, man. I like him so much. And you know what? Oh, do you like this one?
I'm just saying, Kenneth, I've watched Walker. A Breece Hall game, and I've watched a Kenneth Walker game, and I'm telling you, I prefer to watch Breece Hall than Kenneth Walker any day of the week, buddy. I'm not saying Kenneth Walker isn't a good runner, but
I don't know about that.
I'd rather watch Breece, man.
I don't know about that. Like, my guy's explosive as heck, man.
I'm not saying he's not explosive. I'm just saying Breece Hall looks better to me. I got to watch that Monday night game, man. And granted, the offensive line didn't look like they were doing Breece any favors, but Breece still, man, that first half. Woo.
That was versus Buffalo, right?
No, against the Steelers.
Didn't he have a bad game versus the Steelers? Why am I tripping?
Bad second half. Oh, absolutely. Bad second half. That first half, okay. Though, was ridiculous.
Okay.
That was after Aaron Rodgers threw two interceptions and the game was basically out of reach, though.
One of them by Garrett Wilson. Bumbling the ball, basically.
Yep. Oh, yeah. In the cover, two throw. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And then Pickens shows him how to do it. He just bubbles the ball and catches it back up. See? Easy enough. How good is to finally have a QB playing QB for the Pittsburgh Steelers? If we were doing, and I think we should probably start doing the power rankings back, like around probably like week 10 or something, just to finish up the season. But if we were doing them right now, where would the Russell Wilson-led Steelers be right now for you?
Outside the top three, maybe even outside the top 10 or top five.
Okay, top five, I can see it, although I would probably push back some of it. Outside of the top 10, I don't know if you can name me 10 teams that are better than the Pittsburgh Steelers.
No, right, I meant now. Outside the top five. That was my bad.
Okay. So just so we're in sync, the Chiefs, the Ravens, the Lions, who else goes ahead of the Steelers?
I could argue the Bills. I could argue the Texans. Even though the 49ers are struggling, I still think the 49ers are better.
49ers starting Jacob Cowing. Remember when I sat in this chair, in this show, and I told you, for the rookie draft, one of the guys that should pay attention to, Jacob motherfucking Cowing. And you told me, oh, that guy is small as shit. Here you go. Here's your chance. Jacob Cowing, you're about to play actual snaps in the NFL, by the way. Because Deebo Samuel has pneumonia. Brandon Ayuk, just this season he's done. Kittle as well. I believe Kittle has been questionable in practice as well. So, Jacob Cowing, Ricky Pearsall, that got shot in the chest like 3 months ago. Welcome to the NFL.
Bad.
Art. What?
Ricky Pearsall's not that bad. I think. We'll
Ricky
see, though.
Ricky Pearsall is not that bad. But Ricky Pearsall, I don't know, putting a rookie in that situation right away is always kind of weird. Especially for a team like the
We say the that, Niners. But we are literally watching Malik Nabbers and Marvin Harrison Jr. carry their teams.
Well, yes. Rookies. But there's
and Brian
likely...
And Brian Thomas Jr. Yeah.
Okay, but the first two, there's probably two or three galaxies between the talent of Malik Nabbers and Marvin Harrison Jr. and the talent and the hype and the draft position and everything of Ricky Pearsall. Two or three galaxies. Let's put it like that. For Brian Thomas Jr., it's probably only a galaxy and a half. But still.
Out of curiosity, who do you think... You're not going to like me. Who do you think, out of those three rookies, is the easiest to acquire right now? If you wanted to acquire Malik Nabbers, Marvin Harrison Jr., or Brian Thomas Jr.?
I would say it's Brian Thomas Jr. still.
I think it's Marvin Harrison.
It might be because the hype for Brian Thomas Jr. has definitely been going up a bit.
And now this makes me want to do something.
Do not say it. But no, I know what you're going to check. You can check. Go for it.
I'm just curious. I'm just checking some things over here. Hold on.
I'm seeing it right now. So it's not. It has not happened. You can.
He's right under him. Oh,
he's
no.
He's under him. There's like a guy in between, but he's under him. Now, it depends on what you check. If it's super flex or super flex or non-super flex.
I think I'm doing non-super flex. Yeah. Or no, this is super flex. Never mind.
Yeah. Non-super flex, there's a guy in between, basically. The wide receiver.
Oh, yeah.
I know. I don't know. Like, the Brian Thomas Jr. hype. I don't know, man. Leaves a sour taste in my mouth.
Actually, funny enough, if you look at the top three fallers, Marvin Harrison Jr. is the top faller. That's over Travis Etienne. That's over Patrick Mahomes. That's over Rashee Rice, who has a season-ending injury. And that's over future bust Anthony Richardson.
I would say that no one has probably had a bigger fall than Etienne if you look at, like, since the season started.
Oh, yeah.
In terms of points, Jesus Christ, dude. The dude was a top 10 running back when the season started. And Keep Trey Cut is now running back 23.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, like, it has not been a good start of the season for Marv.
I'm looking at these rankings, and the only thing this tells me is that, like, nothing's safe. Because, once again, the top three, obviously the people listening can't see this. The top three right now in Superflex is Justin Jefferson, wide receivers. Justin Jefferson, Ja'Marr Chase, Malik Nabbers, in that order. So, I remember a time when we were doing the offseason, and these top, like, I could name you the top, like, five. And it was Justin Jefferson, Ja'Marr Chase, C.D. Lamb, A.J. Brown, and Amon-Ra St. Brown. I'm pretty sure that was the order.
I think C.D. Lamb was even ahead of Chase.
Yes.
If not, because there was that point in time of when Jefferson...
You're flirting with Jefferson at one point.
Yeah, I even believe that after McCarthy got injured, I believe C.D. Lamb jumped Jefferson.
Yeah.
When we were doing that. But we can see, like, if he ever was wide receiver one, it's fairly quick. But, yeah, he was wide receiver one back in September. So when the season started, he was basically the wide receiver one. He fluctuated between one and two for most of the offseason.
But here's what I'm saying.
August on.
Here's what I'm saying. So, obviously, there's been constants. Justin Jefferson and Ja'Marr Chase have been constants for the last two, three seasons. After that, if you don't got, you know, whoever is consensusly considered the best wide receiver in Dynasty consistently, you have no consistency as far as evaluations for wide receivers. I think your argument that wide receiver is a safer bet because they do fall off, and they fall off hard, and because there are more of them, the fall off can be even more drastic. But the rises can also be even more drastic. Where is Nico Collins? Nico Collins is a top 15 player in Dynasty right now. Where was Nico Collins coming into the season? Because I guaranteed he was in, like, the 50s, if you do all players.
Okay, so I'm just checking wide receiver-wise. We fluctuated most off season from, like, 17 to 15. Because, like, the Stephon Diggs shit.
Not overall, you mean of wide receivers.
Yeah, wide receivers, yeah.
One, two, three,
then after the season started, he jumped inside of it.
Yeah, he's top 10 right now. But AJ Brown is
like, okay.
Good.
Here's the thing, though. I understand that, and they do fall and whatnot, but it's like, you look at Marv, right? And Marv, in terms of a positional ranking, he was wide receiver 5 ever since he came into the league. Ever since the draft, he was wide receiver five. He flirted with wide receiver. Yeah, wide receiver three, whatnot. He entered the season, he was a top five wide receiver. He was wide receiver four, if not mistaken. But the thing is, you look at his stats and you look at like his production and whatnot, and he is wide receiver. Let me open that up. So who has Marv? I believe Marv in our league. Yeah, it's Austin. Marv right now is wide receiver 31.
Which, by the way, I asked Austin about Marv and he wasn't.
And he's not trading him.
Funny enough, I actually also asked about Zay Flowers, and funny enough, his reasoning was he thinks there's a world where next year his rebuild maybe not be done, but he could have like a competent team where he's winning games next year. And he doesn't want to make a move risking the possibility of that if he gets enough hits. It's like, that's interesting.
That's what a certain someone should have done.
Excuse me?
That's what a certain someone should have done.
Ooh.
A few years back. Ooh. You! Like, always trading the guys for more picks and whatnot. Like, eventually you need the base to go off of. And, like, this is his base.
I have
this
a base.
Is what I always defended. Yeah, but now, like, you've been rebuilding for, what, 6 years now?
You know. It's fun.
So it took you 6 years to get a base. It took him two or one.
Here's the thing. Who do you think got more in their trade deals than I did when I moved Breece Hall and Bijan Robinson? I got a lot.
Sure, you got a lot, but it's not enough. I don't know if you wouldn't be better right now with Bijan and Breece.
I wouldn't be. That's what I'm saying.
But wouldn't you?
Why would I?
I'm trying to find what deals did you make to get those guys.
This is why I missed Flea Flicker. It was much easier to find that on Flea Flicker.
It was. It's still easy. You just need to go to the guys. But I think it was mostly picks, so that's why it's not showing up. But if you go on the Breece Hall page, yeah, you got like, for Breece, you got Devonta Smith and you got Drake London. Which I still think it's a good trade, regardless. And then I believe you traded me London for Olave.
Yep.
I didn't get something extra on that.
You got a first. I remember it.
Okay, got a first.
Which I don't know if I regret that or not. Like, obviously, yeah, you can say in hindsight, London is worth more than Olave right now. But at the same time, as we have seen, you are one good run away from being a top five wide receiver to the people. So, I don't know. Get your guys. That's what I'm saying. Get your guys.
Bijan, in hindsight, you probably could have gotten more.
Yeah, probably.
Because you got Pickens, you got Michael Mayer, but the Brock Bowers sort of sent that to a loop. Then you got two firsts, but that's 25 and 26 when he did this trade in 23. So he didn't get anything in 2024. And you got a few, I believe you got seconds, thirds, fourths, whatever. But that's probably the main issue for you there, is what you got for Bijan. And then what you got for Devonta.
I never liked Bijan. I never liked Bijan. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah, and it's tough. I get through that sometimes as well. It's like valuing the players that you don't necessarily like that you have in your team. You're always going to think that you're making a good deal because of what your perception is of the player.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's like...
But even I turned the things I got for him into better stuff. So...
I think so. I don't know. I don't know what you got for Pickens, but I think it was a first and change, right? But that's what I mean. Like,
Mark Andrews.
You did
Mark Andrews, and then I
sued. Oh, it was Mark Andrews.
Yeah,
for Pitts and something else. It was a larger deal. I believe it was. You sent me Kamara, and you sent me.
And I got Kamara in that deal too.
Andrews. Yeah. So it's like, but that's the thing. Like, for example, for Devonta Smith. So for Breece Hall, you look at Breece Hall, you got London, and you got Devonta Smith. Great. I like that deal. But then it's like, that should have been your base. Your base are those two young wide receivers. They're super young, lots of upside. But then you turn around and you trade those guys. You trade Devonta Smith. Devonta Smith especially. You traded him. You traded like Tony Pollard, some other shit that doesn't really matter. And you got back like Bateman, Stroud, and a first. It's like the end goal always being the first is the sort of thing that I've always been against you for that, because at some point you're going to need the base. And I like that Austin is already like setting that ground. Like
base.
Marv and Zay are the bases here.
I guess that's fair, yeah, for Austin. Yeah.
Like even if he moves him, like I wouldn't be opposed to him moving him, but it's like it's moving him for another guy that can be the base and then some. Not just for the big straight up. That's what I meant when I said like he did what you should have done in my eyes. But that's how I always see things. That's why I don't go through rebuilds all that much.
True that. Because you suck.
Because I suck. And my bet of Marv outscoring, I believe it was outscoring Malik. DJ Moore. No, it was outscoring DJ Moore this year. I have $20 on that. On that with some guy. It looked good a few weeks ago. Now it's looking iffy right now because DJ Moore is wide receiver. He's wide receiver what? He's wide receiver 23. And is, as we said, he's wide receiver 31. And DJ Moore has had his buys. So that's not looking great right now. Let's put it like that.
You're not doing too good, friend.
Yeah. But before we went on this,
sorry.
How good is it for the Steelers? Because we went on that round and we said that you don't think the Steelers are top five, probably top 10. I think they're probably top five right now. But how much of a change was that, huh? Like, the offense finally moving the ball. Russell Wilson comes in, gets booed for the first quarter and change. After that, he goes on a tear. He throws for over 200 yards, throws for two touchdowns. Offense looks clean. They get to run the ball. Defense looks deadly as well. For a team that some were saying, oh, benching Fields is the worst decision ever. He's going to lose the locker room because Fields won them those games. Oh, shut the fuck up. He didn't win them shit. He basically did the bare minimum. And the defense won them those games. And they were just like, do we have a QB in the house that we can run an actual offense and not the Justin Fields offense? And they find out that they do. They do have a QB like that. So Mr. Unlimited is back. And Pittsburgh Steelers. Steelers Nation. Let's weld.
Oh my god. You with the corny shit, dude. Like, so here's the overarching point. Do you think the Steelers win the AFC North because of the bad start with the Bengals and the little mini slump the Ravens had? Or do you think that this... Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, I think Lamar is still Lamar. If you look at the stats, he's piling up another possible MVP season. So I still give it to them.
So you think the Ravens are winning the division?
Right now, yes. I do think the Steelers probably finish second because of the Cincinnati Bengals slump. But I don't know if the defense keeps playing like this, because defense sometimes fall off. Sometimes they don't travel as well. As the season progresses, they get injured and whatnot. They miss a key piece here or there. They're kind of screwed. I don't know if the defense keeps playing like this, because as we said, the Ravens have a few deficiencies on defense. They have a very stout run defense, but in terms of the passing game, they're giving up huge chunk of yards at times, just giving up those huge plays that just flip the field from one point to another. if they don't tie it up there and like actually start playing some good best defense, I don't know, man. It feels like it could actually be a coin flip, but right now they have the same record, if I'm not mistaken. The Baltimore Ravens are 5-2. The Pittsburgh Steelers are 5-2 as well. So similar records. I just think that although Russell Wilson made that offense like look like an actual offense, I still don't know if they're like at the level of the Ravens, which I don't think they are, to be honest. So
that's an interesting take. I do think that maybe I'm a hater. I think the Steelers are going to fall off.
And that's always been the thing, right? It's like you look at the later part of their schedule, and that's been the issue. We said about them since the start that their schedule was fairly easy to start, and then it sort of heated up. It's like we're getting to that point. I believe it's after the Giants. They have, if I'm not mistaken, they have the bye. I'm opening up the schedule here. But if I'm not mistaken, they have the bye after the Giants. So Giants, they have the bye afterwards. Then they face the Commanders, which, again, prior to the season starting, people didn't think were that good. So that's another good team that they're going to face. Then they face the Ravens. They do face the Browns twice, but with the state of the Browns, that's probably an easier matchup than we were thinking at the start of the season. But the Ravens, Browns, Bengals, Browns. Then they face the Eagles, which, you know, I feel about the Eagles, but on paper, they're still a tough matchup. And they face the Ravens again, the Chiefs, and the Bengals. That's like, it is a death row of teams. Now, I think some of those matchups look more winnable right now than they did prior to the season started.
Interesting. Oh yeah, I mean Kansas City. I can't get a read on Kansas City, honestly.
We're just going to say that you're the best team. Period. Are they not the best team in the league?
They're not playing like it.
What does their record say?
That they are the best team in the league, but I mean, you can win
sometimes
games.
Sometimes that's
early.
All you need.
Huh?
Sometimes that's all you really need, to be honest. It's like, they are just like.
But to the guy who was like, the Philadelphia Eagles, yeah, they're winning games, but they're not good looking games. They're not winning good enough. And you called them fraudulent.
But the thing is, if you look at those games, the issue was that they were at full strength on offense. They were, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, for the most part, they were at full strength on defense, and they still played like ass, because it was very clear, like, the issue wasn't actually the skill position players. It was the scheme around them. It was the offense around them. If you look at the numbers, they still had a good offensive line, but they were being countered, quote-unquote, on defense. And if you look at the Chiefs, it's not all bad. Like, the defense is healthy and the defense is playing great. The Eagles defense wasn't playing great. They were allowing huge numbers at times. Like, they were getting scored on by teams that had no business being in that conversation. And it's like, you look at the Chiefs offense, and it's like the offensive line has been healthy for the most part, but they lost their running back one. They lost their wide receiver one. They lost, now they're supposed to be next up wide receiver in Juju. He's also gone now. So, like, they are facing an uphill battle in those regards. And so you also look at their strength of schedule right now. And to date, they face the third toughest schedule in the league. They are 7-0 or 6-0. Did they have their bye? I don't think they had their bye. They had their bye. So they are, yeah, they're 6-0. And they face the third toughest schedule in the league. Huh. And if you look at the remaining schedule, it is the 26th hardest schedule remaining. So it's like, It is a fairly easy schedule to end the season. They are going to get healthier as the season progresses. Pacheco should be back for a playoff run, a potential playoff run. Rasheed Rice is probably not going to be back. I would say that's a very doubtful. But as the season ramps up, Kelsey should probably go back to his norm. So I definitely think that they are still the best team in the league. But hey, I think it's almost a toss-up between them and the Ravens. I still think I would put the Chiefs up there. But the Ravens also, they face the second toughest schedule. Now, their remaining schedule isn't all that easy. It's the 18th best. But they're still, like, they're 5-2, so.
There's just something that doesn't feel right about I you're making the good arguments. The Kansas City faced a lot tougher opponents than everyone else. That they're still winning the games, but there's just something that doesn't feel right. And maybe it is that they're without all these weapons.
I think it's also that, for example, I've mentioned this in other episodes.
By the way, they got DeAndre Hopkins.
Yeah, they did get DeAndre Hopkins. I was forgetting about that. Maybe that's just how much of a factor I think there actually are. he kind of looks dusted. But hey, maybe it's just the Will Levis effect on him. Maybe he gets better if he goes to the Chiefs. But it's like, I think part of it is that we're seeing this offense, and this offense looks rough at times, in terms of actually passing the football. Like, Mahomes is making more mistakes and whatnot. He's not having those flashy numbers, those 300 passing yard games, those 4 touchdown games, those 5 touchdown games. Those aren't happening. But I feel like if he didn't have those numbers earlier in his career, people wouldn't be expecting that. If he had a trajectory more like a Brady, for example, that didn't really post those numbers early in his career, where he was more of a glorified play, what's the name?
Field general.
No, it's not that. It's the game manager. Yeah, the glorified game manager. That it was very clutch for all intents and purposes. He was still very clutch in that role, but that was his role for the first 3 Super Bowls. Then he ramped up, and by the end, like, the offense, the team around him wasn't as good as it was to start his career. So he had to do a bit more on offense. He was asked to do a bit more. If Mahomes had an arc like that, instead of the opposite, where he needed to do a whole lot because the defense was fairly shitty for most of his, like, early career, if he didn't have to do that much, and now doing this little, which is just basically like, it's not even that he is playing terribly. I just feel like he's playing to a level that is not his prime Mahomes level, but when he needs to, when there's a key drive, when there's a key moment in the game in which they need points, that Mahomes comes back. So it feels very selective when that Mahomes comes back, but wherever they need them. And maybe it's just like, you're playing the regular season. These teams really don't care about the regular season. These winning teams that have been winning, I mean, they have won 2 Super Bowls. Is it 2 or 3? 2, right? 2 in a row, 3 total. So
Chiefs, yeah, 2.
2, 3 total, right? Or no? Or is it
that 3? They've won, yes, they've won 3.
They've won 3. They've appeared in 4 and they won 3.
Yeah. Okay. They've won 2 in a row. They're going for the three-peat, and I think they've won either 3 or 4 total. Yes.
Yeah, I think it's 3, and they went to the 4th, which was versus the Bucks. That was the first one, and they lost that one. So they've beaten the Eagles, and they've beaten the Bengals, and last year they beat someone else. They beat the Niners. Yeah. Wait, didn't they beat the Niners twice?
Yes, they have beaten the Niners.
So they have 4 Super Bowl rings.
Yes, they have 4 Super Bowl rings.
Wait, what the fuck? When did that happen?
Exactly.
Oh, I thought they only had 3. What the actual? Now I need to double check that. Like, it can't be real. Do they
Patrick
really
Mahomes
have?
Has... Patrick Mahomes has 3, 2020, 2023, 2024.
Okay. So I'm confused.
Chiefs as a franchise have 4.
So they didn't beat the Niners in the year that I'm remembering. No, the Niners won versus
that's some. Two of the three. Yeah.
No, that can't be. Oh, because, okay, never mind. I was counting the Bengals as a Super Bowl win.
Oh, the Rams win? The Rams Super Bowl?
Yeah. I was gonna, the one in which they had to beat the... yeah, that. Okay, that is. I was thinking, like, the Bengals faced the Chiefs in that Super Bowl, and they lost that one, so...
No.
Okay. Yeah, so they beat the Niners. They lost the year after. They didn't win to the other Super Bowl because they lost to the Bengals. Then they won the 2 Super Bowls afterwards. So, yeah, they were going for the 4. Like, this regular season really doesn't matter all that much for him. So it just feels like when he needs to, he just makes those plays. So that's why, I mean, at the end of the day, like, I really can't put the Baltimore Ravens ahead of them, because although they were fairly close to beating the Chiefs on week one, they still didn't beat the Chiefs, so.
You don't want to give the Bengals the credit that they deserve?
Hey, the Bengals also nearly beat the Chiefs, but the Bengals have other issues. I don't know if their offense is fixed. I think it is. I don't know if their defense is fixed. For all I know, they just faced DTR. And the defense looked great, and they faced Danny Dimes without, like, 2 starting tackles, and the defense looked great. So, I don't know. We'll see how they do versus the Eagles, because for all intents and purposes, the Eagles do score points. So, I think looking at this table, because I have a table here open with the teams, the percentage of making the playoffs and whatnot, and it's basically like a mini power rankings. The one thing that kind of surprises me, and maybe this is an outtake, would you be surprised if the Niners miss the playoffs this year?
With how they're playing recently? No. With, like, the knowledge that they're still the 49ers and that they'll eventually get players back, yes.
Okay, because they are right now, I believe they're 2 games behind the Seahawks. The Seahawks are 4-3. The San Francisco 49ers are 3-4. So they are a game and a half or a game. No, they're a game behind because they did beat the Seahawks. So tiebreaker right now goes to them. But they are, again, 3-4. And they have the 9th toughest schedule remaining. And they face the 22nd easiest. They are without Ayuk for the rest of the season. CMC, they are saying that he maybe is going to play after their bye. So they face the Cowboys this week. Then they have a bye the week after. So they're saying that CMC is probably going to be back the week after. So week 11.
We'll see.
I don't know. I feel like Purdy is finally playing a step below
what he was playing. Is he playing a step below, or is this who he was, and the targets were just so good that it didn't matter?
You're saying...
I'm just asking a question here.
The Niners team made him look better than what he actually was.
I'm saying that the weapons around the Niners may have inflated in stats. And we may have given him more credit than he deserved.
I could see it because past 2 weeks, he did look like, I don't know, he looked like he was a 5th-round QB or a 6th-round or 7th-round, whatever he was. He did look like a day 3 QB. So, and from what I read, according to reports, he got a scolding from Shanahan at halftime versus the Kansas City Chiefs. There's some trouble in paradise there.
Do you think he deserved it?
Yeah, he was playing bad enough. Like, I know he's the QB, I know he's all that, but at the same time, you still need to keep your players accountable. That's how you run a good organization. That's like, if you're playing like shit, you should get shit. It's that simple. I expect that from all the good coaches, no matter how good your QB is. If he's acting up, if he's playing like shit, I mean, you got to call him out on that, and you got to get him down and get that sword. So I'm behind that. Looking at the, just to move off of this like power ranking stuff and whatnot, right now, the Chicago Bears are, let me pull up their schedule here. They are sitting at a nice and pretty 4-2. The 5-2 Washington Commanders go to Chicago this week. They are going to be without Jaden Daniels. It appears like, I believe they were seeing if he was going to practice today, but he hasn't practiced the past 2 days, so it looks like it's going to be Mariota. So they're going to face the Commanders this week. And if they win, they go up to 5-2 in one of the most, if not the best division and most competitive division in football right now, which is just wild. They have an implied chance of making the playoffs of 44%. So it's nearly 50%. But
who does? The Bears?
The Bears.
Yep.
But the Bears have faced the 32nd easiest schedule in the league so far. Mm-hmm. So it's like, it can't get any better than that. And for the remaining of the schedule, they are the third toughest schedule in the league. Do we actually think that they can get into the playoffs? Because they have the third toughest schedule in the playoffs and in the league.
Let's
right now.
Let's not forget, they're also in the division with the Lions and the Vikings.
That's why. And the Packers.
So,
and they haven't faced any of those teams. So that's why they have the third toughest schedule in the league. It's because they faced the best division in football. Those six games are all missing. And it's like, you can make an argument that although I think they are very good, or at least good, I still think they're probably the worst team in the division. I guess close. But yeah, like they are 5-2 or 4-2 or whatever. They're 5-2. They haven't had the bye. They're 4-2, my bad. They're 4-2. They already had the bye. That is, you're coming off the bye. It's like, and you're the worst team in your division. And you are a very good football team, for all intents and purposes. Like, the defense is playing good. Their running game is now looking good as well. Caleb looks to be a bit better right now. It's like, and it's still that you're the fourth best team in your division. How wild is that? Like,
and now, and this is going to be Austin's argument for Caleb being a bust. He couldn't even get his team, you know, past the basement.
To be fair, if they win the next three, which is doable because it's a Jaden Daniels Commanders, it's an Arizona Cardinals team that has looked iffy at times, and then it's the New England Patriots.
Those
three games.
So what you're saying is their last, like, six games are all against division opponents?
Yeah, they're the last. So that's from week 11 to week 17, they face the division twice. So week 11, 12, 13, it's division. Then they face the 49ers at San Francisco. They have a crazy tough schedule. Week 13, they go at Detroit. Week 14, they go at San Francisco. Week 15, they go at Minnesota. So they have three away games versus two of the best teams in the NFC and one that could be, by that point, the best or one of the best teams in the NFC. Then they face the Lions, they face the Seahawks, and they finish the season at Green Bay. So this is like the last, what, eight games of the season for them are absolutely just crushing, man.
Sounds like a plan. Sounds like an opportunity to shit on Caleb Williams. Let's go.
I mean, it's definitely going to test him. It's like, it's going to be a test for sure. Like, this is a rough, but it would be a test for anyone. I don't expect many guys to go in this like stretch of games and finish above 500.
That's an interesting
thing. But basically, like, if they do win the next three games, which are winnable, they would be sitting at 7-2. At the state of the NFC, and with the NFC North being so strong, and it's probably going to split a lot of wins between them, I would think that probably a 10 or probably 10 wins probably gets you. So they just need to finish. They can even finish below 500 because it's 8 games. So they can finish 3-5 in that stretch, and they would probably be in the playoffs. So these next three games are some of the most important for this season, basically. It's almost imperial that you need to win these games.
There you go. I can't hear you. I can't hear you anymore.
You can't?
Oh, there we go.
Okay.
Technical difficulties.
Technical difficulties, for sure. Okay, so what else do we need to talk about? We've been going for 1 hour and 20.
We talked about the Browns, we talked about the Bengals, we talked about the Seahawks, we talked about the sad state of... We haven't really talked about that much about the sad state of the Arizona Cardinals. I think they're terrible. You're like, they're sketchy. No, they're terrible, dude. They're terrible to watch. I honestly don't even know how the Chargers lost that game.
Yeah, it's like...
I'm dead serious.
They do look terrible. But it's like, they seem to have stretches in which they don't look as bad. It's like, those stretches are basically like carrying them through some wins. Because like, for a team that looks as bad as they do, they're still 3-4. Like, it's like the defense has looked rough. Yeah. The offensive concepts look wild at times. The scheming in general looks rough, to be frank. So I don't know. I feel like this is a team that is quite weird to figure out right now.
Yeah. I think Tampa Bay, obviously, we talked about Tampa Bay earlier, but they're riddled with injuries. But I think if they even had a slightly better defense before this, they'd be one of the top teams in the NFC easily.
The thing is they also don't have a good defense. They have a shit defense.
Yeah.
That's kind of the thing here.
Kind of hard to judge. Huh. You know, I got offered a trade for Justin Jefferson. I haven't rejected it yet. I'm rejecting it. But it was Jalen Waddle, a first and a second. I'm just like, that's not enough.
I don't know. I don't know if you will have that trade anymore because Waddle got... Oh, no, that was another league in which he got traded. Never mind.
Yeah.
He got traded in a separate league.
Yeah,
that's not a... What?
Who is coming back?
Who is coming back this week? Has officially passed concussion protocol.
Yep, who's coming back? So
we might start to see a
slimmer of the dominant Miami offense that we're used to and accustomed to.
I'll tell you what, I don't think this Miami Dolphins offense is... This Miami Dolphins team is going to be great rest of season.
You don't think so? Even if Tua stays healthy?
I think Tua fixes some of the issues. I don't think Tua fixes everything. I think the defense has been playing below average.
Oh, the defense is terrible.
Yeah, for a lot of time. I think they need to go on a great run to save the season, and I'm not sure if they're capable. Like, I think they will play great offense the rest of the way, but it's like, it's not as exactly like they were. If you were watching the Miami Dolphins game prior to Tua going out, like that game versus Buffalo especially, they weren't looking all that sharp, let me tell you that. Like, that wasn't the high-powered Miami Dolphins offense, and it's sort of been like that for a bit right now, where it's... No, I'm starting to have some doubts in regards to McDaniels, to be honest.
To McDaniels?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. Why McDaniels? Mike, the coach, not Jaden. Mike McDaniels, the coach.
Yeah, Mike McDaniels. Why?
I don't know. It feels like the boy genius, the offensive mastermind, isn't necessarily as good as a coach as we thought about. Because, like, one of the great things about a coach, like, one thing that a great coach does well is adjustments. And it's like, when he's down at half, his adjustments are non-existent. When he had to adjust his offense to a new QB, like, we've seen great guys adjust. For example, I remember when Jimmy G went down, the Niners went with guys like Nick Mullins, for example, and the offense ran okay. Last season, the Minnesota Vikings, when Kirk Cousins got hurt, like, they put Nick Mullins in there, and they went okay. They put Josh Dobbs in there. Didn't go great, but it was workable at times. I was like, you look at that Miami Dolphins offense, if you even can call that an offense, when Tua was out, and it's like, it's one of the worst things around. So where are the adjustments?
So you're saying that the... Okay, that's interesting. You're saying that you don't think the Dolphins have adjusted enough to Tua being out, and you think the Dolphins were more contingent on Tua putting up points and scoring points, and that just pressured teams to try and score points, and then they just countered off of those mistakes.
Yeah, I think he has a good system when everything is healthy. So when Tua is there, I think they're a match made in heaven. I think probably we should give a bit more credit to Tua for his role in this team and this offense than we should give to McDaniels and the players around him, especially now that we've seen like a decent sample size of no Tua and like everyone healthy almost. That's like, this is very rough. But I definitely think so. I think like if McDaniels was a better coach, I don't think the offense takes this much of a step back. He just looks clueless out there at times. It looks like he has no idea what he's doing anymore. Like, he has one game plan, and if it fails, it sort of ghosts up, and that's that. If it works, it's great. The league is just... This is one of the highest scoring offenses in the league, and like, they need to catch up. They make mistakes when trying to catch up because it's such a high-paced offense, and it's high-octane offense, where it's just like, if you start falling behind, you're going to have to throw more, and you're going to make more mistakes. And then, like, playing defense becomes a bit easier in that regard. If you're not playing prevent, of course. But it becomes a bit easier in the regards, like, you, if they're passing more, they need to step back in the pocket more. You have more time to get pressure on them. You don't really need to worry about the run all that much. So you can bring more heat. That makes the QB maybe go some happy feet, maybe have some issues in the pocket, throw some lazy balls, some balls that he shouldn't be throwing because he's trying to catch up. And that leads to interceptions and just leads to a snowball there. But when he really can get the offense going, and when something is missing in that, some clog in that machine is missing, you see the end result is like, sure, Tim Boyle isn't a great QB. Tyler Huntley isn't a great QB, but I've seen Tyler Huntley being a QB that started for a team that lost their QB. And like, Tyler Huntley was a pro bowler for all intents. I know he wasn't actually pro bowler. It was a sub that he made it in. But for all intents and purposes, he got to that position and he went to a Pro Bowl. because like the coach molded the offense, the coach made the adjustments necessary, and the offense ran semi-functionally with a backup. And you can even get that in Miami.
I still like Miami for the rest of the season, assuming Tua is healthy.
I feel like we're in for a rough awakening with Miami.
I've had enough rough awakenings, you know. The Titans, you know, they disappointed me. San Francisco is not the San Francisco I knew and loved. It's been, the Bengals started off slow. It's just been a rough season for you, boy, you know.
Yeah. Hey, but at least the Packers are going okay.
At least the Packers are going. Jordan Love started the season out.
Yeah. He's been playing well enough. Taking way too many risks, but I guess like he has the talent to do those things and get away with them, so.
He is a risk taker.
And we just talk about how, and I'm fairly certain we're about to end this fairly enough.
Yeah.
But how wild is it that the Dallas Cowboys, so they're facing the Niners today, and I believe it was on Wednesday, if I'm not mistaken, or Tuesday, that news comes out that their kicker, Brandon Aubrey, so they're basically their best player. Let's put it like that. It's wild that in this day and age, the kicker is the best player of any team. But he is, and surprisingly enough, he is a spread mover because by basically like he's automatically, as soon as they cross the halfway point of the field, so after they cross the 50-yard line, he's basically automatic for points. So they're getting points in that situation. And he got called for jury duty. So they don't know when he's going to be available. They don't know if he can play this game or if he's still going to be stuck on jury duty.
Interesting. And that
how wild is that?
The line.
I believe it moved either half a point or a full point since we picked. So I don't know how much of that was Aubrey, but I think Aubrey was around half a point.
That is crazy.
Yeah. Right now they're minus four, the Niners. We got them at 4.5. Yeah.
Welcome to betting, friend. Welcome to betting.
Yeah, I think I forgot to mention, but last week, so the week in which Austin came in and called the game as well, we actually both got screwed, if I'm not mistaken, or all of us actually got screwed by the. So yeah, he got. Yeah, Austin didn't get screwed because I pointed out his pick, and it was the Los Angeles Rams -4.5. I believe we both were on the Rams as well, but we picked them at -4.5, and the line went up a point. So because we picked on the app, it basically just refreshes every day until it closes. Since we picked on Monday, the lines hadn't closed yet. So because of that, the line went up to 5.5, and the Raiders only lost by 5. So Austin
what?
Won. Yeah. We got screwed there. Because we initially picked that at 4.5. And if the initial pick counted, we would have won. But since the line moved to 5.5, and like this doesn't like ask you if you want to repick or whatnot, like it should probably. But it is what it is. It basically just refreshes and updates. And then just keeps your pick on the same side. So because of that, we lost that pick, by the way. I believe we were both on that one.
That's yeah. Crazy.
We were both on that one. And the line at 5.5 lost. And the line we picked on the show at 4.5 won. Oh,
so buddy. We should have.
We should have won one more game. We both should have gone 8-7.
That's crazy.
That's why it's always better to pick the games on a Tuesday.
That's true. It is always.
Although, if it was 5.5, I probably still pick the Rams. So.
Because it really doesn't cross any big numbers for me. So it's not like it doesn't cross a 6, 6.5. Doesn't really go below for the 3.5 or anything like that. So. Yeah, 5.5, 4.5. It's mostly the same, except in this case, where it wasn't.
We've taught you about life today. That's the show. We did our job.
Yeah. If you want to go over the picks again, I don't really think there's a point. But I think there was like one or two I feel like the one has changed that I can give you like for sure, which was the Patriots and the Jets. It was 6.5 when you picked. It's now 7.5. I was on the Pats, so I'm just going to stay on the Pats because they're getting an extra point. So perfect. But that's like the only one that I'm seeing that changed somewhat. Yeah. We're still getting, the Falcons pick changed a lot, but it was after the line closed. So right now the Falcons are -2.5. The Buccaneers, we picked them at -2.5. And they're now +2.5. So that's fun.
Wow.
Yeah. Because they lost, and they lost Evans, and they lost Godwin. So yeah, but it's still a major flip. Like, it flipped 5 points, so...
If I'm not mistaken, I picked the Falcons in that too. So, screw you.
Yeah, I have the Buccaneers. So, yeah, that's one, huh? That's like the big one. The
Falcons. Nice.
Yeah.
At +2.5. Let's go. Yeah.
I do have. Do you have the? But this one didn't move as much. Who do you have in the Bears and the Washington Commanders?
I have the Commanders.
Yeah, so I got a bit of an extra thing here. There now, the Bears are -3 right now, and I got them in the app at -2.5. It's not even close to the flip of the Falcons.
Oh yeah, no, I don't know. Not at all. All right, well, let's wrap it up.
Okay. That's enough for this today. We went for like an hour and a half, basically. So that was a good show. Okay, so guys, thank you. If you stayed up this long, thank you for following along, for tagging along. Again, if you follow the picks and you fade me every Thursday night football, you would now have 17K if you're just rolling over $100, basically, from week one. So it pays to listen to the show. You just have to know when to fade. And Angela has been telling you to fade me for quite a while now. So, but that's all jokes. Thank you guys for listening. If you're listening on the Apple Podcast app, if you're listening on the Spotify app, or wherever really you're listening to your podcasts, doesn't really matter to us. Just drop us a 5-star review. Just leave us a comment if possible. I know, for example, Spotify is possible. So do that, please. And turn on the auto downloads. Doesn't cost you anything except for like a tiny bit of space in your phone. But you are hopefully going to download this anyway. So it helps us quite a bit. And it's free. So if you're listening on the YouTube app as well, just make sure to do all of the things that you've been doing for quite a while right now. So just the subscribe, the like, the comment, all of those good things really helps out as well. And yeah, hope you have... This is coming out on Sunday again, right? Sunday. Or is basketball coming in? Okay, it's still Sunday. Okay, so Sunday you're going to be listening to this. Have a great day of football. No early games, if I'm not mistaken. I don't believe there's like a London game or anything like that. So yeah, all games start at like 1 p.m. for you guys as well. All of those good things. So yeah, enjoy football. Hope you have a great week. Hope you win your leagues in fantasy as well. And we'll be back the week after. Talk to you guys next week. Bye.
See you guys.